I've recently been watching the miniseries, The Borgias. The Borgias. I don't know if you've ever seen that. It was on Showtime a few seasons ago, and now it's available on Netflix. That's where I'm watching it. And The Borgias is a miniseries that's about the time of history from around 1492 to 1503 in Italy. It focuses on families of that time, and at that time, what we now know as Italy was very much divided up into regions: Venice, Florence, Milan, Naples, Sicily. And those regions, those areas, were pretty much controlled by families: the Medicis, the Borgias, the Orsinis, the Sforzas. There's a whole bunch of families that kind of controlled those areas. And the history of that time really is about those various families maintaining control of their areas, as well as perhaps at times negotiating with other families to maintain that power, or negotiating ways of expanding their power. Well, this show focuses on one family called the Borgias. And the main character is Pope Alexander VI, who was Rodrigo Borgia, who was elected to be Pope Alexander VI in 1492. He's played by Jeremy Irons, the actor, one of my favorite actors. I first discovered Jeremy Irons years ago on Bride's Head Revisited, if you remember that show. And over the years, he's had an interesting career. Pope Alexander VI would not have been described as the holiest of popes that sat in the chair of Peter, to put it kindly. He was someone who sought power, control, wealth, influence. And to be fair to Pope Alexander VI, that was the context in which he lived at that time. There's no knowing what it would have looked like if someone else had been elected to the papacy. But he was elected at that time. And the show is about very much about his life and his time as Pope Alexander VI. There's a scene from that movie that I want to share with you that I found interesting as I watched it this past week. Pope Alexander VI calls in his son. Pope Alexander actually has four children by a mistress who lives in the Vatican. And these children were the most important part of his life. And he calls in his son, Cesare, who happens to be a bishop. And eventually he names him a cardinal to contain and continue the power of the Borgia family. But at this point, he's a bishop. And Pope Alexander says to his son, this bishop, to go out and, let's say, carry out a deed that he needs done, that it's not of the highest caliber. And the son says to Pope Alexander, "But this is a grave sin that you're asking me to commit." And in only the way that Jeremy Irons can do it, he turns to his son and says, but son, you know, the successor of Peter will grant you absolution." So he goes forth as the son and does the deed. And the scene is Cesare, the bishop, going to confession, in a confessional, to his father, Pope Alexander VI, seeking forgiveness for the act that he has performed at his father's request. And he pleads with his father to not continue in this role, but to be a military leader where he can yield the sword and wield the sword and be in a different position. His father says, "No, I need you. I need you here in the Vatican to do the work that I need done. Ego te absolvo. I absolve you of all your sins." And that's the way the scene ends, and out they go from the confessional. Now, you look at that scene, I think any of us would say, "What is that all about? I mean, was that true confession? Was that true transformation of life?" You know, you look at that scene, and it's not of the highest caliber what life is meant to be in the church, or what confession was meant to be. That scene came to me as something to highlight today because I was reading the gospel reading we just read today as preparing to share with you some thoughts this morning. And in many ways, what I think we're hearing Jesus doing is challenging the folks of his time, challenging the Jewish community, to see the laws and the rituals and the guidelines and the ways of their life in not just some exterior mode, not just as something that you do and then something happens, but it's something of a much deeper level. Jesus is calling the Jewish people of his time to not just see these laws and these rituals and ways of life as something out there, but to go much deeper, to go much deeper into their meaning and in their significance. Jesus is someone who was formed and shaped in the Jewish tradition. He was formed and shaped by these Jewish laws, these commandments, these customs, these rituals. And they led him to an encounter of God, an encounter of the holy. And so Jesus speaks from that place. You know, some suggest that Jesus came to abolish the law, to do away with the law of his time. I'm not so sure that's a correct interpretation. I think Jesus came to call people to a deeper level, deeper understanding of those laws and those commandments. Jesus really was speaking from what I refer to as the prophetic place. You remember, I've said this over the years in different times and places, but there's sort of like three stages to religious development. You know, one is that first stage of belonging. You belong to a religion. You belong to a belonging system. And you give yourself to the authority of that belonging system. You live into its ways, its rituals, its way of being. It's like an outer authority to which you give yourself to. The next stage of religion is when you begin to, through that experience, begin to really encounter the holy and know who God is in your life. And you begin not to speak from this outer authority, but you begin to speak from this inner place, this inner authority of an experience of the holy. And the third stage is referred to as the wisdom tradition, where one moves into a realization that the world is not about either or, this or that. But it's about both this and that. Both and. And that's a whole nother level of spiritual development. But I think Jesus is speaking in our gospel today from that prophetic place where he's saying, you've heard the commandments say this, but I say, he's speaking from an inner authority, from an experience of the holy, an experience of God, and calling people to a deeper understanding of what these laws are about in our lives. He's calling the people to go deeper, to go deeper. And over the centuries, we've continued to go deeper. As we hear that gospel reading today, if you listen, there are some things in that gospel reading that we don't even see in the same way today. You know, we've grown in our understanding of God's call to us and relationships, we've come to speak from a different place. But Jesus is in his context, in his time, speaking to people and calling them to something deeper. About a month or so ago, we gathered together as a diocese at our diocesan convention. And Bishop Curry gave his address at convention. Everybody looks forward to Bishop Curry's address. Everyone looks forward to Bishop Curry speaking whenever you're with Bishop Curry. It's certainly one of his great gifts that he shares with us. And at this convention, he shared something about this idea of going deeper. At the convention, he shared some thoughts with us, which are kind of, I think, obvious in many ways, and it was important to bring it up before us all, that we're living in a different world than perhaps we lived in over the centuries as church. We no longer live in a world defined by Christendom. We don't live in a world where we can presume everyone understands or values the way we see the world as people who walk in faith. There was a poll done over the years. It's been done many times. But recently, the number that's risen to the top is this. People are asked, what's their religious background? What's their religious upbringing? You know, Christian, Jewish, Episcopalian, within those categories, specific areas. And the category that's growing the most is the category none. When asked what their religious background is, none. And I look back at my ministry, being a priest almost 35 years, and even over those years, I've seen generations change. Where at one point there were folks who perhaps were raised in a religious tradition and then perhaps didn't practice that or got distant from it in their lives. I think we're experiencing today people who haven't even been exposed to a religious tradition, haven't even lived in a religious tradition. And that's the world around us. And how do we speak to that world? How do we use a language that communicates that? Brian McLaren, who is a writer who I really have gotten into reading recently, if you look him up, anything that he's written I think is of value, looks at this world in which we are called to do church, to be church, and says we need new ways of understanding what our role is. Brian McLaren spoke to the Anglican bishops recently and shared with them. He himself is not from the Anglican tradition, but he spoke to the Anglican communion and to the bishops, the Episcopal Church, saying that the Episcopal Church, though, has something to give. It has something to share to this world around us. Our challenge is that we sort of fly under the radar, continuing this journey of sharing the gospel that Jesus calls us to.